It's Morning Edition from NPR News. Good morning, I'm Steve Inskeep. Barack Obama once said he could not disown his former pastor, but Obama's getting close. Obama is responding again to a minister whose excerpted sermons first drew wide attention last month. This week, the pastor reopened the debate by declaring that his critics were really attacking the black church. Jeremiah Wright said the U.S. government is capable of anything, including spreading AIDS. And he even suggested that Obama did not mean it when he distanced himself from the pastor. NPR's Don Gagne reports on Obama's effort to show he does mean it.
During his Monday speech, Reverend Wright was at turns defiant and dramatic, gleeful and provocative. In short, he was a major league headache for the Obama campaign, and all eyes were on the senator to see how he would react. Back in mid-March, when those video excerpts of Wright turned up, Obama responded with his much-praised speech on race in America. In that speech, he condemned what Wright said, but not the man himself.
I can no more disown him then I can disown the black community.
But with Wright's new comments this week, repeating and expanding on earlier controversial statements, Obama was forced to speak out again. His first reaction came late Monday afternoon. He said the Reverend Wright did not speak for the campaign. He again condemned Wright's words, but it was not a forceful rejection of Wright. Yesterday, Obama felt compelled to say more and say it more strongly. He spoke to reporters following a town hall meeting in Winston-Salem.
When he states and then amplifies such ridiculous propositions as the U.S. government somehow being involved in AIDS, when he suggests that Minister Farrakhan somehow represents one of the greatest voices of the 20th and 21st century, when he equates the United States wartime efforts with terrorism, then there are no excuses.
Obama said he felt anger and outrage when he heard Wright's latest remarks. He said such statements offend him, offend all Americans, and should be denounced.
The person I saw yesterday was not the person that I met 20 years ago. His comments were not only divisive and destructive, but I believe that they end up giving comfort to those who prey on hate.
Further, Obama said he was disappointed that Wright criticized the Obama decision to distance himself from his former pastor last month. Wright said it was just playing politics. Here's Obama.
I want to use this press conference to make people absolutely clear that obviously whatever relationship I had with Reverend Wright has changed as a consequence of this. I don't think that he showed much concern for me.
Later in the day, Obama was on stage at another town hall meeting, this one in Hickory, North Carolina. He was nearing the end of the hour-long event in which he had made just a fleeting reference to this latest controversy. Obama spoke of how his opponents take him on by avoiding real issues.
So they're talking about who is he, and do we know his values, and he's not wearing a flag pin right now, and, you know, his former pastor said some crazy stuff.
He then described his approach to his campaign and his entire career as being devoted to an attitude exactly opposite to the divisiveness employed by Reverend Wright. The audience applauded. 53-year-old Celia Teague of Hickory spoke in the hallway as people filed out.
I'm through with Reverend Wright and what he has to say. What I want to focus on is the issues and what concerns us here in Hickory. And I think that's what the media needs to focus on, because we have problems here. We've had a lot of plants that have closed. The gas prices are high. We have people that need health care that can't afford health care. And so my focus is not on Reverend Wright or what anything Reverend Wright has to say.
But Teague is an Obama supporter. The senator needs voters who have not been in his camp to come to the same conclusion. All of this comes just 1 week before the next round of primaries in North Carolina and Indiana, where he needs a pair of wins to reclaim the attention now being paid to Reverend Wright and to Obama's rival, Hillary Clinton. Don Gagne, NPR News, traveling with the Obama campaign.
Senator Barack Obama's former pastor has been making the media rounds. The Reverend Jeremiah Wright spoke yesterday at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., and this was how he characterized the uproar over statements he's made over the years that many have called inflammatory.
This is not an attack on Jeremiah Wright. It has nothing to do with Senator Obama. It is an attack on the black church launched by people who know nothing about the African-American religious tradition.
Joining us to talk about Wright and the Black Church is NPR News analyst Juan Williams, who's written about the role of the Black Church in the civil rights movement. Good morning.
Good morning, Renee.
Juan, in your opinion, is an attack on Reverend Wright an attack on the black church?
Not at all. Reverend Wright's appealing to the black church tradition and to black churchgoers to protect him for saying controversial statements that have hurt not only Senator Obama, but hurt Reverend Wright's reputation. The things that he has said are not heard regularly in the black church, despite what he would want people to believe. You don't hear cursing in the pulpit. You don't hear terrorism equated with errors made by U.S. foreign policy advisors. You don't hear paranoid theories about the government spreading AIDS in the black community. Certainly you hear conversations about certain contemporary issues, but not of that nature. Really, there is preaching from the good book. And Wright said yesterday the black church, though, was founded in an environment of slavery and racial intolerance and still invisible to the dominant white culture. Therefore, he's trying to say you don't understand. Just all that he said about the founding of the church and slavery is absolutely true. But by contrast to what he said, he went on to add that he's not running for political office, that he's running for Jesus. I think he's trying to use black theology to create some kind of black national identity that would insulate him.
Now, Juan, Jeremiah Wright has reinforced a distinction that he's made in the past few days between himself, a pastor, and Barack Obama, a politician. Reverend Wright characterized himself as a truth teller, Obama as someone who would say what he has to say to get elected, implying really that Obama is not telling the truth.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, it's obvious now that Wright really has his own agenda. The Obama campaign indicates that they had been in touch with Wright at some point, trying to encourage him to take a back seat. But yesterday, Obama said it's obvious that Wright, has not been coordinating with them over the last 3 days. And David Axelrod, who is an Obama senior political advisor, said, to his mind, Wright is not out there with the intent of helping Senator Obama. In many ways, you could read what Reverend Wright had to say yesterday, Renee, as reacting to Senator Obama's Philadelphia speech, in which the senator characterized Wright as being somewhat stuck in past grievances, an older black person who went through some experiences and not understanding what's going on in contemporary America and the progress that's been made. And you can also read, therefore, that Wright was upset by the idea that Obama's distancing himself and now taking the offensive, going after Obama and saying Obama just is saying what he has to say to get elected. He's nothing but a politician, and the true prophet, the truth teller, is himself.
In defending Reverend Wright, though, some supporters have noted that Martin Luther King was regarded as quite radical in his day, weighed in on foreign policy. Does that comparison hold up for you?
Renee, it doesn't. King was particularly critical of the Vietnam War toward the end of his life, critical of U.S. foreign policy, but he did not damn America. He did not get involved with all these kinds of outlandish theories about government conspiracies. King was usually inspirational and challenged America to right the ship, deeply patriotic and so emphatic about black patriotism to the point of being criticized by younger militants. King was about trying to create coalitions. If you look back at his I Have a Dream speech or the speech he gave the night before he died, it's always in the keeping with the Bible and the sense of hope and deep faith in the black tradition.
Juan, thanks very much.
You're welcome, Renee.
NPR News analyst Juan Williams. He's the author of This Far by Faith, Stories from the African-American Religious Experience.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. America has come to know Jeremiah Wright by soundbite. The sermons of Barack Obama's former pastor have been looped in video clips on YouTube and shown over and over on cable news channels. And now, Reverend Wright is speaking out defiantly in a fresh round of appearances. Today at the National Press Club in Washington, Wright said his sermons have been taken out of context. He also said that his critics are not simply attacking him, they are attacking the entire black church. NPR's Don Gagne reports.
It was a full house at the National Press Club headquarters in downtown D.C. this morning. The breakfast speech marked the beginning of a two-day conference on the black church. But given the location of today's event, it also brought out a large media contingent. Reporters lined the walls of a room that was otherwise packed with Wright supporters, who gave him a standing ovation as he took his place at the head table. Wright spoke for about half an hour, focusing on a religious tradition he said has too long been misunderstood.
Black preaching is different from European and European-American preaching. It is not deficient. It is just different. It is not bombastic. It is not controversial. It's different.
Wright's main audience responded with loud and frequent applause, but his speech was followed by a Q&A session dominated by the reporters in the room. Questions were submitted by index card and read by the program's moderator, USA Today reporter and press club officer Donna Linewan.
Can you explain what you meant in the sermon shortly after 9/11 when you said the United States had brought the terrorist attacks on itself? Quote, America's chickens are coming home to roost.
Have you heard the whole sermon? Have you heard the whole sermon? No, the whole sermon. That, yes or no? No, you haven't heard the whole sermon? That nullifies that question.
Wright then said he'd try to answer the question in, quote, a non-bombastic way. He said he was quoting an ambassador to Iraq in that sermon. Then he added,
Jesus said, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. You cannot do terrorism on other people and expect it never to come back on you. Those are biblical principles, not Jeremiah Wright bombastic, divisive principles.
As for that moment made so famous on YouTube when he said, not God bless America, but God damn America, again, he says it was taken out of context. But then he added,
God doesn't bless everything. God condemns something. And D-E-M-N, dim, is where we get the word damn. God damns some practices. And there is no excuse for the things that the government, not the American people, have done. That doesn't make me not like America or unpatriotic.
He was asked about critics who call his sermons unpatriotic.
They are unfair accusations taken from sound bites and that which is looped over and over again on certain channels. I served 6 years in the military. Does that make me patriotic? How many years did Cheney serve?
Wright was asked about his relationship to Nation of Islam leader Louis Farrakhan and his racially divisive statements. Wright said he doesn't always agree with Farrakhan, but praised him as a man that black America listens to. As for Senator Barack Obama, who has criticized his former pastor's controversial remarks, Wright stressed that he was Obama's pastor, not a spiritual mentor. He then added his own critique of Obama.
He had to distance himself, because he's a politician, from what the media was saying I had said, which was anti-American. He said, I didn't offer any words of hope. How would he know? He never heard the rest of the sermon.
As for the candidate himself, Senator Obama spoke to supporters today in Wilmington, North Carolina, and made no mention of Reverend Wright there. Later, though, when questioned by reporters as he boarded his campaign plane, the candidate offered this, quote, I have said before and I will say again that some of the comments Reverend Wright has made offend me, and I understand why they have offended the American people. Obama went on to say, quote, certainly what the last 3 days indicates is we're not coordinating with him. And this means the Obama campaign is preparing for yet another wave of attention to a story that it had hoped would fade. Don Gagne, NPR News, Washington.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. This week, we conclude our year-long series, Climate Connections. In more than 200 stories, NPR and National Geographic have examined the past, present, and future of global warming. We've asked how people are affected, what kinds of solutions are out there, even how climate can shape our own evolution. One thing climate experts often say is that to slow climate change, we need to change the way we live. But selling that message to the public hasn't been easy. NPR's Christopher Joyce has this profile of a man who argues that religion, not science or politics, is the perfect climate change messenger.
Martin Palmer leads the way into a churchyard in a tiny village called Ashbrittle in West England.
And this is where we come to the yew tree.
He's brought me here to see this ancient yew. It stands in the shadow of an old stone church. Like the church, he says, the yew represents staying power.
This extraordinary tree we're looking at in front of us here is somewhere between 3,500 and 3,800 years old.
So old that its branches have folded over and rooted themselves into the ground to form a sort of nave around the original trunk. Palmer steps inside.
But isn't it amazing to stand embraced inside a tree? I just think it's astonishing.
Astonishing also because this tree survived several ecological disasters, such as the Little Ice Age between the 14th and 19th centuries.
Appalling weather. It was freezing cold, incredibly wet. The crops rotted in the fields. And then, of course, you had the added joy of the Black Death.
Palmer is tall, ruddy, wears muddy boots, and laughs easily. He's the founder of the Alliance of Religions and Conservation, a small group working out of Bath, England. Their credo is that religions, from Buddhism to Zoroastrianism, are like the yew tree, in for the long haul. They can tackle long-lasting problems, like climate change. They also know how to talk to people, and not with scientific data.
There are tens of thousands of scientists who do that perfectly well. What we want to bring is the passion, the commitment, and the interpretation of meaning that religion brings to that data.
Palmer says faiths can be very different on the subject of nature. Some see humans as stewards of the earth. Others believe the opposite, that nature protects humans.
Both of those call for us to take our share of responsibility.
So Palmer and his colleagues at the Alliance travel the globe. They cajole religious leaders to learn about climate change and take the message to their followers. Those leaders bring more to the table than faith, though. Palmer says they control as much as 7% of the world's forests, forests that help curb global warming.
We have in Cambodia Buddhist monks ordaining trees as monks.
Thus conferring protection.
Exactly.
When you're talking about a change in the environment that's global, how much difference are a few trees in a religious sanctuary going to make?
Well, when we talk about a few trees, the Shinto own 2.4 million hectares of forest in Japan, so it's not inconsiderable. But I think let's also look at the faiths as major investors. Well, the religions of the world are the third major identifiable investing group in the world.
The Alliance advises church leaders on how to invest in green projects and to log their forests in a more environmentally friendly way. They've helped Sikhs in India find alternatives to fossil fuel for their network of kitchens for the poor. They look for messages about nature in each faith. Palmer found his own faith as a child. He grew up in a working-class public housing project. When he was about 10 years old, he had a fight with his parents, and he ran off. He ended up at Wells Cathedral, one of England's finest.
Because I needed to be in a place of beauty. And as I walked in, evensong began. This sublime music that just stopped me in my tracks. And there's a wonderful phrase that the Orthodox use. They say, "We knew not whether we stood on earth or in heaven."
Today, Palmer brings his view of earth and heaven into the pulpit of his own church.
We're just walking up this very ancient lane to our church, and there's probably been a church on this site for something like 1,600 years.
It's 200 yards from his house.
Good morning, good morning.
Inside, he has about a dozen parishioners bundled up in winter coats.
Because, as you all know, we are a carbon-neutral church. That is, we have absolutely no heating whatsoever. We rely on thermal underwear and body heat. So,
Palmer says priests and rabbis and imams know how to explain complicated abstract ideas in parable and metaphor. Today he tells a creation story from the ancient Jewish text, the Talmud.
The Talmud says that the angels went to God and said, "You've just created this wonderful world, and now you've created these human beings who will only go and mess it up. Are you stark staring mad?" And God says, "I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing." But then the earth spoke, and the earth was afraid. And the earth said, "These creatures, they will only rebel against me and harm me." And God answers, "I promise you that they will never be allowed to destroy you."
And Palmer sees it as his job to help God keep that promise.
Let's be off.
After church, he laces up his muddy boots and walks an old Roman path. Romans grew grapes here. The climate was warmer then. Experts say it will be again. But Palmer says experts don't necessarily know how to get people to do anything about it.
The predominant model that the environmental movement, which is quintessentially, its origins are entirely in the West, is sin and guilt, topped by a good dollop of end-of-the-world language.
Instead, he says, people need to celebrate nature as well and their place in it. That's a message that resonates with the United Nations, which is collaborating with the Alliance. UN officials say they need people who can speak about climate change straight from and to the heart. Martin Palmer says that's a job he can do, with help from monks, priests, ministers, and clerics of all faiths.
My understanding of my God, and I work with many, many different religious traditions, is that my God is not there to solve the problems. My God is there to say, you are co-creators with me. Now work out what that means. It is not about, if we pray hard enough to God, he will end climate change. Yes, we should pray to God. We should also get off our backsides, get out there and do something about it.
Christopher Joyce, NPR News.